Hey everyone, Tawny here. I am so excited to share that my husband and I launched a non-alcoholic beverage called Parentheses. It's technically two drinks, a before and an after. The before uses herbs that stimulate the senses, and the after uses herbs that calm the senses. Head to drinkparentheses.com and follow us at drinkparentheses. Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's your girl Tawny, joined by my fabulous bestie BFF.
Lisa, what's up, my love?
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm good. In California and everything. Yeah, I got no complaints. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I made hard-boiled eggs in my air fryer this morning, and that was a very exciting moment for me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was like the easiest thing in the world. I just put them in, and then 10 minutes later, I have hard-boiled eggs, and it's no dishes. It was great. So
nice.
As I love cooking,
life hack.
But I hate
life hack.
I hate dishes. So if you want hard-boiled eggs and you don't want to like boil water and all that, throw them in the air fryer. Okay. Anyway, this is not sponsored by air fryers.
No.
I just really like mine. Okay. So we're going to talk about this new term that I learned and then I shared with Lisa. This new term, or new to me, called productivity dysmorphia. Productivity dysmorphia. So you might have heard of body dysmorphia. Most women have heard of body dysmorphia, where or people who struggled with eating disorders, body image issues, anything like that. Body dysmorphia is a somewhat common term where, for me, it shows up as looking in the mirror and seeing someone else. I see myself, but I see a very distorted version of myself. And it's not all the time. It's sometimes, but I look in the mirror and I notice different things about my body and I pick them apart, and none of them are based in reality. This is, you know, it's very common. It's something I'm working with my therapist on. It's in the first chapter of my book, because I talk about how body image issues intersect with sober sex and dating. And So just wanted to give a little context to the term dysmorphia.
And I would just weigh in on that to say, I feel like I have finally gotten to the point. I struggled with body dysmorphia my entire life, but I feel like I have finally gotten to the point. And I don't know if it's just a function of being about to turn 58 years old or whatever it is, but I don't care anymore. I mean, not that I don't care. I take care of my body because I want to be healthy and I want to be whatever, but I don't even give a thought anymore to how people are judging my body, or how I'm or misjudging my body myself, or thinking that people are standing around judging my body. And also, you know, I don't stand around really and judge other people's bodies. So I don't know why I think everybody's always looking at me and finding issues. But you know, I think it is, whether it's just a function of getting older or just whatever, it can shift. And, you know, I think you have now a healthier relationship with your body.
It's definitely healthier, but it's something that I'm actively working on.
It's a work in progress.
It is very much a work in progress. So when I heard this term, productivity dysmorphia, everything just kind of clicked. Lisa knows all this, so I'll give you guys a little bit of insight. I've talked on the podcast about burnout, and a lot of people are feeling burned out right now. It's not just me, but a lot of people my age in particular. I don't know anyone my age or younger who only works one job, and everyone is just struggling. We're burned the fuck out. So where productivity dysmorphia comes in, it's kind of like on picture a Venn diagram. There is burnout, there's imposter syndrome, and there's work addiction. you know, all three of these come together to create, to have what we're now calling productivity dysmorphia, which is basically in the same way that when I sometimes look in the mirror and I don't see an accurate version of myself, I look at my career and I don't see an accurate rep. I don't see what it actually is. I see what it's not. I see what I have not accomplished. I see what other people have accomplished, and I compare what I've accomplished to them in the same way that I would compare my body to other people's bodies. So with this, there's an article in Refinery 29. It's actually from 2021, but it's still hyper relevant, and we'll link to it in the show notes. I read this article and shared it with Lisa, and you guys know I'm a linguistic nerd. I love learning new words, new terms, A, because it's fun for me, but B, when I learn that a way that I feel has a name, I feel less alone. I know that, oh, other people feel this. There's even a term for it. So there a lot of people must feel this. So it's this, I feel happy to be seen, but then I feel really sad that lots of other people feel this way. You know what I mean?
I get that. Yes. Yes. And just what you said about that Venn diagram, about where they overlap with the work addiction, imposter syndrome, and what was the other one?
And burnout.
Yeah. Burnout. Yeah. When you said those three things all together and I pictured them overlapping in a Venn diagram, it made me sick to my stomach. I'm like, what a toxic brew.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. And it's, keep going. I cut you off.
No. I think it is like but yet at the same time, it's something that I just felt like this term and this article and the way it discussed it just nailed it in a way that I hadn't seen. And I know the article's from 2021, but I haven't seen it described this way and discussed this way before. And it is true. And it goes, it hits. Like, I could see when I was in my most of those three overlapping feelings was when my drinking and my drugging just got worse.
Yeah.
And worse and worse. Right. You look at all the and you look at that and you go, no wonder. Right. You can see how much pain that living that kind of life day in, day out puts you in. Right. I mean,
I'm literally living it and it sucks. It really sucks. But again, it's funny. I texted this article to you and then I texted it to my therapist and I had a session with her. Like, you know, this was on a Monday and I met with her on a Tuesday and I go, let's talk about this article tomorrow. And she goes, okay, understood.
So that is so you in therapy, right?
Oh, yeah.
You give like your therapist an assignment.
I do. Well, as they say, therapy happens outside of the therapy appointment. You know, it's you right. have to work on right. your shit and then kind of report back. And sometimes you can give your therapist an assignment. You
know? Yeah. No, I love it.
But it's, you know, it's interesting that imposter syndrome is in this mix because I don't necessarily struggle with imposter syndrome too much. There's actually, and they address that in this article I'm going to read. I want to just read the whole thing. Cause like if I had printed this out, I would highlight so much of this article.
Tabs.
Okay. So Dr. Jacinta Jimenez is a psychologist and leadership coach, and she talks about how imposter syndrome was the first psychological concept that came to mind when the journalist was reaching out to her about these feelings, the journalist who wrote this article. But let's see. But while imposter syndrome bears some of the hallmarks, persistently doubting one's skills or talent, Dr. Jimenez says it's different because imposter syndrome is about being exposed, about being a fraud, being exposed as a fraud. Like, what am I even doing here?
Fear of being exposed as a fraud.
The fear of being exposed as a fraud. And same as the journalist who wrote this, I don't really connect with that right now, at least. Imposter syndrome didn't ring true for me. But it's because productivity dysmorphia is more about output, not confidence in ability. I know mm-hmm. that I'm good at, I know that I'm good at my job, and I'm very grateful to know that. But there's still this element of imposter syndrome that I think is worth addressing, because a lot of people do feel that, you know, that with that Venn diagram of like, a lot of people do feel like a fraud.
Yes.
And
I that, did. Yeah.
That feeling like a fraud can lead to you producing more, giving more output.
Well, you feel like you must continue because, you know, to me, I can speak personally to my experience with it. It was like, okay, any day now, they're going to realize what a huge mistake they made in hiring me and how, you know what I mean? Like, somebody's going to come in here and be like, and I came by it honestly, because in a way, because when I was a summer associate, I was at this party at the apartment, you know, the palatial apartment of the chair of the firm. And some much older tax partner's wife asked me where I went to law school. And I said, Rutgers. And her face like looked horrified. I was like the only person from Rutgers, but I was at the top of my class. And she looked at me and she said, I think it's really commendable of the firm to take students from Rutgers.
Oh my God.
Literally to my face. And I was like, I was just astounded. My friend Ed was with me and he like pulled me away and he was like, next time somebody says something to you like that, ask them where they went to law school. And it made me want to I finished at the top of my class, but I was an editor on the law review. But I don't have to justify myself to this. But that left a mark with me. I mean, I hadn't even joined the firm full time when she said that. So
a comment like that says way more about the person than who they're saying it to.
Right. But you tell that to a 24-year-old law student hoping to get a job at this fancy firm. Yeah.
I hate that so much. And like, people say stuff to us and they don't realize how it sticks, you know? And like, I remember.
Yeah, I will never forget that one comment that woman made.
Well, and there was one of my friend's moms, you know, going back to my body dysmorphia, one of my friend's moms, I was like 22, 23. She asked me if I was pregnant because the way my stomach looked. And shortly after that, I developed I over-exercised. I obsessively counted calories, and I still obsess over my stomach. And there's a lot more at play than just this one comment, but the fact that that comment still rings in my ear.
Yeah. No, because it hits this really like deep nerve that you didn't really realize. Like, it's like, you know, you hadn't really thought about it. And then someone says something stupid like that. And you're like, oh, you know, yeah, of course, you know, there's something wrong with my productivity, or there's something wrong with where I went to law school, or there's something wrong with my stomach. You know, it's bad. But I want to get back on this idea, because you're right about, and I think for every person, the elements of those three things in the Venn diagram, the work addiction, burnout, and imposter syndrome, it'll be in different amounts for different people, those three things percentage wise. And but I think we need to talk about really this idea of the productivity thing, that you never feel like it's enough.
Well, this is a really good quote from the article. She says, productivity dysmorphia is simultaneously a symptom of modern work's afflictions, but also the cause. Fixing it is less about ridding ourselves of these feelings and more about looking to what they are telling us. And that is essentially what we do on this podcast, is we talk about, like, you know, we can relate this to drinking, right? It's like, it's not so much that you're drinking, it's how are you feeling when you reach for that drink? So it's right. the same kind of thing, as like, how reading this article helped me be more mindful of like, okay, am I taking this new assignment because I feel like I need to do more to prove who I am as a person? Yeah. Am I taking this assignment because I feel like I'm not doing enough? Am I taking this assignment because I genuinely want to do it? Do I need the money? You know, and again, there's no right or wrong answer here. It's just being more mindful of the workload that you already have and what you're continuing to add to your own plate.
Yeah. And that workload includes all your personal life commitments, you know, like when you're thinking about, do I take on, like, say, you know, there's some committee at work that you get asked to be on, or there's some article that someone wants you to write, or something like that, to think about it in, you know, I mean, I've always had a knee jerk that if I got invited to something like that, yes, I do it. I don't say no to anything. But yeah, to really, one of the things in recovery that hopefully we can do, and that hopefully, you know, can help us with this body dysmorphia, some of the things are like, yeah, you need to do that. Like, I need to get on that committee because I have a bigger goal of X or whatever. But yeah, if it's just to show that I can, like, that's, you know, that's another analysis. Because for everything, like, it always comes back to our energy budgets, right? Like, for everything, yeah, I take on, I'm giving up something else. So if you feel like you have to be on, like, I know, you know, how burnt out you've been, and just the idea, and it's hard for us. And I know it's hard for you to accept that, okay, you don't have to go on every podcast that invites you. You mm-hmm. don't have to attend every event. You don't, you know, and it's like, but I'm promoting a book, but I'm doing this, it doesn't matter, right? If it's going to take you down.
Well, and I've, you know, I learned that the hard way on my book tour. You know, I had an event that, you know, I know I didn't do that great at, which is fine. You know, you and I have talked about this. You've given talks where you were just like, yeah, I wasn't as on as I would have liked to be.
Yes.
This happens. And I came home from that event, beating myself up because I didn't do as good as I thought I should. I probably did fine. You know,
you did great. I'm sure.
I probably did fine, but it's being aware of, I feel like this because I said yes to too many things. And this yeah. is a recurring habit, behavior of mine that, you know, my husband knows, my therapist knows. And it's, you know, something that this article really brought up for me is, like, talking about that Venn diagram that does include work addiction. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you and I have talked a lot about how, like, I'm a workaholic, I'm obsessed with work, but it's like, I feel like productivity dysmorphia exists under the work addiction umbrella, because it's like, yes, like, work addiction. Yeah. But I feel like it needs more nuance than that. Like, why? What does work addiction actually look like for me? Where does it come from? And, you know, for me, something that I'm unpacking in therapy is, you know, I grew up very poor. I grew up on food stamps. So I have this scarcity and lack mentality that scares the shit out of me. And I work my ass off because I don't want to end up like that again. So, you know, and the reason I share that is because it's like that quote that I just read. It's being aware of how this stuff shows up in you, in your daily life. Why are you saying yes to this thing? You know, why are you saying no to this thing? It's complex, and there's a lot more nuance to it. And so something that I did recently that actually helped me with productivity dysmorphia, I made a list of all of my current projects, and this is just work stuff. This doesn't include, like, showering, getting groceries, cleaning the house. You know, these are all
walking the dog.
Yeah. Like, normal life stuff. Being alone time, having time with my husband. Like, I didn't include any of that. This is just work stuff that I made a list of. And I looked at this list and I was like, holy shit, this is a lot. Like, I think I'm not doing enough. Every time I feel like I'm not doing enough, I'm going to look at this list of all the shit I have going on. And seeing that list made me weirdly empathize with myself of, like, girl, what the hell are you doing? Like, take stuff off. Don't add any more to this. Actually take some of this stuff off. And so that's now a lens that I'm putting new assignments through as well. How, like you said, energy budget. If I say yes to this, how much energy will that take? saying yes to this, well, also, what is this going to say no to? You know, it's being really aware.
I love that. It's exactly right. And I think one of the things that could help, I'm just trying to put this in the context for somebody who's like in the work environment or whatever. I always had on my, I think a lot of lawyers seem to do this, you know, especially dating back because, you know, to when I started practicing, but I would always have, you don't go anywhere without a legal pad. And on the right-hand column, on the right-hand edge of it, I would always have a list of all the things I had to do, right? On this deal, that deal, whatever, blah, 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 this, that. And I would, you know, just making sure nothing falls off my radar. But I never went and looked at what I had done, like over the last month, 6 months. And so that's why I love when you said you made a list of everything you had going on, like that idea of putting it in, you know, putting it down on paper or on the computer and having like a hard look at it, you're going to go, oh my God. Yeah. I've done a lot like in this last month, in these 6 months or whatever it is, you know, and because I feel like part of this dysmorphia is not just feeling like we have to do more, but failing to see how much we've done, you know, in a way that gives us confidence that we've got this. We're doing what we need to do.
Yeah.
We are productive. We are, you know, somebody who was not productive, as we're telling ourselves we're not productive, doesn't have a list of things they did, you know, whether it's personal stuff you had to do, whatever it is, work stuff, whatever, you know, we never give ourselves like the credit for, you know, what we've done. And it's always in the context of life doesn't stop happening, right? Your kid gets sick. Or you get sick or whatever happens, like it is not a static thing. And there's no, you know, like, it's like we always have talked about, you know, when you, you know, for there's no, you know, that there's sort of like when we say don't do this alone, when we say, you know, don't struggle alone, we say there's, you know, there's no trophy for toughing it out by yourself.
Yeah.
Right? There's no award. You don't win anything at the end of the day. You know, you're just hurting yourself. And that it reminds me of that idea of like, hey, there's no trophy at the end of any of this, right? Like, this is about trying to, you know, live in a way that gives you as much balance as you can find on a daily basis.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah, I hear you say that a lot in my own mind. You always say like, why suffer? Why suffer?
Why suffer? Right.
Yeah, I hear that a lot in my head. And it's really good advice that I put some, it's a filter, honestly, where I'm like, okay, why am I doing this? Why am I mad or anxious or frustrated right now? Like, what's the point? And it's hearing you talk about what you've done that I actually find that inspiring. And I've actually, I don't even think I've told you this, but I've done something similar to what you just described where, you know, at the end of the year, I normally make a vision board of what I want the next year to be or something like that. And for 2023, I actually did the opposite. I made a list of things that I made visuals of things that I've done, things that make me happy. Because I feel like if I make a vision board of shit that I have not done or what I need to accomplish or what I think I need to accomplish, that's going to keep me in this sickness. I need to reflect on what I have done and stay present to what I am doing to really feel that balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way. Because when you're living in the dysmorphia, you're living in the future, right? Which you can't control. You're living in like, I need to do this because otherwise tomorrow they're not going to look at me as productive or it's not going to seem like I did anything or whatever it is. And, you know, in looking at it with some balance of what was done, you know, you realize like, and how did you do that? You showed up each day. Right. Yeah. That like, you know, one day at a time. It's always about
it is
today about and, you know, that.
I've asked Nick to help me where, like, if I'm tired and I've done a lot in a day, I'll actually ask Nick, like, can you remind me that I've done enough for today? I don't need to do anything else. And he does. He'll remind me. He's like, can you know, go take a nap, make some tea. Like, he reminds me of the things that calm me and keep me at homeostasis instead of more, more, more. So, right. you know, this is an example of, I think this whole episode's an example of recovery in action, where it's like, yeah, yes. I've quit drinking. Like, the thought of drinking is so far from yeah. my mind. It's this stuff. It's the daily stuff of being broke, trying to do 100 things, trying to stay present. This is the work. You know, this is what we mean when we say one day at a time. Yes, right. Don't drink. Of course, don't drink, or whatever your behavior is. Like, don't do the thing. But look at why this is why we say examine why you drink, because that stuff's right. going to keep right. popping up. Right. You know, just because right. I don't drink anymore, but I still have that anxiety that I was self-medicating for years. Still here, still pretty strong.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, this is what a recovery program looks like. It's therapy. It's reading these kinds of articles. It's sending them to a friend. You know, this is what my program is.
But don't feel like you have to do all those things, or you're not doing it right, or it's not, or you're not being productive enough.
Oh my God, how meta! It really,
it's
yeah.
True, it's true though. It's true though. Yeah,
I'm going to win at recovery.
I'm gonna win. No, there's no prize. Yeah, you get to live your life each day in a way you'd like to live it. That's the prize. This is the prize.
And I am a masochist who genuinely likes doing, like, self-improvement work with my therapist. Like, you do.
This is your thing. Yeah,
this is my thing. And this is. And that's also why Lisa and I say there's no one way to recover. You know, this is what my program looks like. Do what feels right for you. And God, if you have one takeaway from this episode, I would just say do less. Do less stuff.
Yeah.
Do the things, you know, maybe if you're going to make a list of all the stuff you have going on, also make a list of the things that make you happy. You know, what are the things and people and activities that make you happy? Make sure you're sprinkling that stuff in too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have a music minute for this?
I don't have a music minute, but I have a couple books that I wanted to recommend.
Oh, okay.
if I may.
Yes. I have a music minute though.
What's your song?
I think this is all very much made me think of The Weight by The Band.
Yes. Oh, I feel that weight.
Right? And like,
I do.
Take a load off. Right?
Take a load off, Tawny.
Yeah, take a load off, Tawny. That's exactly it.
Maybe I'll listen to that after this episode. Thank you.
If you listen to it, do the one that was recorded during the pandemic with all the different people in different countries. I watched that.
It was beautiful.
A couple months ago. So good. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the books.
Okay, give me the books.
The books that I recommend. So I actually heard about this article reading a book called The Success Myth by Emma Gannon. She has a wonderful Substack as well, a great newsletter. Another book that I recommend, Rest is Resistance by Trisha Hershey. And going back to the body dysmorphia, a book that's really helping me right now is called Body Neutral by Jesse Neeland.
Oh yeah, you sent me that thing yesterday.
It's a response to the body positivity movement where, you know, for a while we were told to love our bodies, where body neutrality is more of an approach that's just like, just don't hate your body. I would say
that's how I am accepting my body.
Exactly. Accept it. I would say it's almost like a harm reduction approach to just don't hate your body. Just feel neutral about it.
Yes.
And then I've mentioned this before, but Emily Nagoski and her sister wrote a book called Burnout that is about unlocking the stress cycle. I'm a big fan of the workbook. So I'm using that a lot. There's journal prompts that are really helping me get to the root of my burnout and just accept that I'm doing enough. So
The links will to those books will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
I think this was an important conversation.
I think so too. I think more people probably struggle with this than they even realize.
I didn't have a name for it. This whole thing just gave me a name for it. And that helps.
It's you're definitely not alone. I struggle with this stuff. There's an article about it. There's books about it. Like, it's, you're doing enough. And Lisa, text me later and remind me that I'm doing enough, please.
I will do that.
Tell me I'm doing too much, actually. Tell me to do
less. You are doing too much. I tell you that every day.
So thank you for listening. And you're doing enough. You're doing more than enough. And take care of yourself. Drink water. Hydrate. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.